indeed, here I am. And by the way, some people thought I was back in the Philippines. I obviously am not. I'm here in the high desert. We no doubt will make a trip back to the Philippines sometime in the coming year and show off our little one. But until then, I'm right here. Graham Hancock, coming up. Graham Hancock has become recognized as an unconventional thinker who raises very legitimate questions about humanity's history and prehistory and offers an increasingly popular challenge to the entrenched views of Orthodox scholars. Graduated from Durham University with first-class honors in sociology, went on then to pursue a career in quality journalism, writing for many of Britain's leading newspapers. Graham Hancock is presently on a lecture tour here in the U.S., yay, promoting the paperback publication of his controversial new book, They All Are Controversial, Supernatural, Meetings with the Ancient Teachers of Mankind. He'll be speaking at the, I believe it's Bodie Tree Bookshop in Los Angeles. Is that correct? At about 3 p.m. on Saturday, 29 September, and at a number of other locations on the West and East Coasts. Details of Hancock's lecture venues can be found on the Talks, Workshops, and Events page of his website, which is www.grahamhancock.com. Graham, welcome back to Coast.
Thank you, Art. It's lovely to be with you again. Great to hear your voice. I'm really looking forward to our conversation tonight.
Well, you began the whole thing. Actually, all your books have been controversial, but Fingerprints of the Gods, of course, right?
Yes. Fingerprints of the Gods was the book that plunged me into years of controversy. In fact, it still hasn't ended. I had no idea when I started researching and writing that book what a storm I was going to bring down upon my own head.
It talks about a lost civilization, Graham, the last ice age and more. Now, as you review Fingerprints now, after all this time, do you stand with all of it, or would you modify something today?
Of course, there are a few issues that I would modify, but the broad thesis of Fingerprints of the Gods, that there has been a lost civilization, that there's been a forgotten episode in human history, and that episode is somehow connected with the end of the last ice age about 12,500 years ago, I absolutely stand by that. I'm certain that this is the case, that we have indeed lost a whole civilization. I just think there's an enormous amount of evidence for this, and I think it takes almost a kind of willful blindness on the part of archaeologists to ignore it. It seems that our society has a vested interest in a particular view of history, and that view of history is that we ourselves are the apex and pinnacle of the human story, and that we should therefore be proud and self-satisfied with ourselves.
I don't know if we're doing that well.
Well, exactly. I don't think we're doing that well at all. But this is the view underpinning ideas about history that are taught in mainstream archaeology. So, a central part of that view is the idea that all civilizations before ours must have been less advanced, much less advanced than we are. That somehow we're the end point of the evolution.
Even assuming that one was advanced in its own way and had built a large civilization, what kind of cataclysmic event could occur that would virtually, not perhaps wipe out all traces, but nearly all traces? I mean, my God, look around us now. If we had a cataclysm in the world, one has to imagine that there would be artifacts that would be available for just millions and millions of years.
Well, certainly, yes. Some of our non-biodegradable artifacts would definitely survive for a very long time. Whether they would survive in recognizable form, whether they would survive in places that people would find them, remains to be seen. We're certainly looking at the kind of cataclysm that wipes the earth almost clean, and there is no doubt in my mind that such a cataclysm did occur around about 12,500 years ago. What's recognized by the scientists is the end of the last ice age, that you had roughly 100,000 years when large parts of the earth's surface were covered by enormous ice sheets. the whole of North America was covered with ice more than 2 miles thick. Similar ice sheet covered almost all of Northern Europe. And this ice melted down, most of it, very, very rapidly. We don't really know why. And poured its contents into the oceans and raised the level of the sea by more than 400 feet all around the world and swallowed up 10 million square miles of land. Now, to put that into context, 10 million square miles of land is roughly the size of Europe and China added together. And my suggestion for why so few absolutely definitive and certain traces of the lost civilization have been found is that most of them are underwater in places where archaeologists are not looking. And secondly, that this civilization of deep antiquity, while advanced and technological in a number of ways, and there are just so many myths and traditions that have come down to us that speak of an episode of technological advancement in the past, nevertheless may have been very different from our own and may have created artifacts and objects that we might not even recognize as being technological in nature.
Actually, there have been hints of it. I think off the island of Okinawa and elsewhere, they found hints of what they think could have been that, right?
Yes, absolutely. And part of my work as follow-up to Fingerprints of the Gods involved a book called Underworld, for which I learned, I became an advanced scuba diver. I learned to dive, and I put in close to 2,000 dives all around the world over a period of about 6 years, following up myths and traditions about underwater cities. Talking to local fishermen and divers, trying to see what they had to tell me, working with geologists who could pinpoint exactly the areas that were flooded at the end of the last ice age and seeing how these tied up. And one area that is particularly interesting is around the coasts of Japan. Off the main island of Okinawa, about 40 miles to the west, there's a group of smaller islands known as the Keramas. At the center of them is a little island called Akajima. And offshore of Akajima, at a depth of 120 feet below the sea, is a gigantic stone circle, a stone circle on the scale of Stonehenge. It's a really awe-inspiring object to see and to study.
Is that part of the Ryukyu Island chain?
Yes, part of the Ryukyu Island chain. And within 40 miles of Naha City in Okinawa. And I've done dozens of dives on this stone circle. No archaeologists have ever dived there, you see, because they are convinced that there's nothing to see, so they don't see the need to learn to dive and go and dive there. But when you do dive on it, you're left in no doubt that you're looking at a man-made artifact on a gigantic scale. And the geological evidence tells us that this artifact has been underwater for more than 12,000 years. Since no civilization capable of creating such a structure is recognized by historians 12,000 years ago, we are, by definition, dealing with the work of a lost civilization. This is just one of a large number of enormous stone monuments that are found underwater off the coast of Japan. Another island is the island of Yonaguni, which is within 100 miles of Taiwan. And, in fact, you can see Taiwan on a clear day from Yonaguni. And offshore of Yonaguni, there's more than a dozen large stone monuments, again submerged to depths of up to 100 feet, and again have been underwater for more than 12,000 years. And all of this adds up, in my mind, to compelling evidence for a forgotten part of the human story, something that simply has not been recorded at all in historical records, but something that is remembered in the myths and traditions that have come down to us from all around the world. There's virtually no part of the world today that doesn't preserve some kind of memory in its myths of a great civilization of antiquity that was capable of extraordinary feats.
And you believe all this is a recurring cycle of destruction, yes?
I think we have to be open to the possibility that it's a recurring cycle of destruction, because that's precisely what the ancient myths say, that there is some dark danger that visits the earth periodically over long periods of history. It may go away for thousands and thousands of years. It may be completely forgotten. It may be something that people never, ever think about, but then, like a grim avenger, it comes back. It returns to strike us down again. And there seems to be some kind of cycle operating, which perhaps we don't fully understand. And I suppose the alarming prospect, and the one that should focus our minds and that we should consider seriously, is that this cyclical cataclysm spoken of in the ancient myths and in the traditions just might return in our own time. And indeed, there's much to suggest that it does. In the work that I did on ancient Egypt with my friend and co-author Robert Bovall,
of course,
looking at the mysteries of the pyramids, the Great Pyramid of Egypt, and the Great Sphinx, one thing is very clear. Now, again, we have been attacked by the academics for putting this argument forward, but there's no doubt in my mind Robert Bovall's Orion correlation theory is correct, that the Great Pyramids of Egypt are laid out on the ground in the pattern of the three stars of the belt of Orion. And because the positions of the stars in the sky change very, very slowly down the ages, and because these changes can be simulated on computers, it's possible for us now to say exactly what period is represented by the pattern of the pyramids on the ground. And that pyramid is roughly 12,500 to 13,000 years ago. And at the same time, there are indications in the pyramids that point forward to the future, again using the stars. At that time, the constellation, 12,500 years ago, the constellation of Orion was at its lowest point above the horizon that it ever reaches in this great cycle of the heavens. And mm-hmm. today, it's at its highest point that it ever reaches and is about to sink down again. And there's a clear link being drawn between that time, 12,500 years ago, and our own time today. And it seems to me to be talking to us, to be telling us something, to be saying that we should learn the lessons of history, that we should be aware that what struck our ancestors down may return to strike us again today.
Okay, a couple of questions. One, you've probably had plenty of time to think about what could have triggered this cataclysm, and I'm sure you at least have guesses, right?
Yes. Well, in fact, we can go a little bit further than guesses. Because there's been some startling new information has come out, and this information actually has come out from mainstream academics, not from the historical alternative history fringe, as they like to call it. And this information concerns the collision of a gigantic comet with the Earth, and that collision, according to the latest evidence and information, took place 12,900 years ago, which is exactly the time frame in which all the evidence points that we lost a great civilization. This comet, it may have had a diameter of as much as 10 kilometers, six miles in diameter.
That would do it. I've seen some specials on the subject, and it would engulf the world in flames. Virtually the entire world would
burst into flame. The whole the gigantic firestorms would have swept the Earth. The entire climate of the Earth would have been changed overnight. We can understand why the ice sheets melted down so rapidly at that time and poured their contents into the seas. And really, the evidence for this comet striking the Earth is absolutely compelling. The Carolina Bays in the United States are very likely to have been created by fragments of this comet impacting with the continental United States.
All right. Well, that absolutely makes sense. It's certainly possible. But it also goes on to beg the question, well, if it did happen and that comet did hit us, why should we expect another one to hit us?
Well, very good question and a very good point. And this is where you need to look at what happens to comets when they hit planets. And we had an excellent example from the comet Shoemaker-Levy, which hit Jupiter back in 1995. It broke up into 27 fragments, and those fragments hit Jupiter like gigantic machine gun bullets. And as it happened, Jupiter swept all of them up, and none of them were left. In fact, by the way, Art, we should all be very thankful for the existence of Jupiter, because orbiting out there in the distant reaches of the solar system, it catches most of the comets and incoming asteroids that might otherwise destroy the Earth.
Thank God, because it's my understanding any one of them would have literally destroyed everything down to the bacteria on Earth.
Absolutely. Would have sterilized the Earth. If we'd been hit by Shoemaker-Levy, it would have been the end. Absolute end of all life on this planet. We would have gone back to basic bacteria. And perhaps we would have had to have waited another 4 billion years before intelligent beings evolved again on this planet. Now, the issue I want to raise is that some of these gigantic objects do get through the guardianship of Jupiter and do come into the inner solar system and do strike planets in the inner solar system. And, and of course, this is pure speculation. But let's suppose that we are dealing with a comet that broke into multiple fragments, and some of those fragments hit the Earth 12,900 years ago, but the rest of those fragments continued in their orbit, and we're talking about a long-period comet here, not a comet that comes around every 100 or 150 years, but perhaps a comet that comes back around every 12,500 years. If that were the case, then we could indeed be facing the return of the remaining fragments of that comet that hit the Earth 12,500 years ago.
Graham, if such remnants came back around, how much warning, knowing whatever we know right now about our ability to see these things coming our way, how much warning would Earth have?
Possibly as little as 3 months. Possibly none at all, depending on the direction from which the comet approached. It's one of the eerie and worrying facts of the study of near-Earth asteroids and comets that we're constantly discovering new ones. Several of them have passed the Earth by extremely close, and were not ever seen by our astronomers until after they had passed us by. That's when we first noticed them.
That's true. You see an article in the newspaper saying, Earth had a close call last Thursday.
Yes.
That kind of thing, yes.
Exactly, that kind of thing. So it's very clear that this could happen again, and we might not be so fortunate. It might not be a close call. These objects might hit our planet. And that's why I think, because with a long-period comet which last passed this way 12,500 years ago, we don't have any modern observations that allow us to plot the trajectory of that object. All we have are the memories and the traditions and perhaps the warnings that have been passed down to us by ancient civilizations. And there's no doubt in my mind, very clearly ringing out like a bell, is a warning coming down to us from the past. And
do you think one of those warnings was issued by the Mayans?
Yes, I do. I think the Mayan calendar is extremely interesting in this respect. And the Mayan calendar does, of course, contain a prophecy which could be interpreted as a prophecy literally of the end of the world in our time, certainly of the end of civilization as we know it, and very specific dates. And the date the Maya put on it, translated into our calendar, is the 21st of December, 2012, as of course is very widely known. I think many people in the world today are aware of this ancient warning and slightly spooked by it and rightly concerned by what it might mean. Now, it's not as simple as that. The Mayan calendar and the ideas that lie behind it are extremely complicated.
All right, Graham, hold it right there. We're at a break point. When we get back, I'm going to ask how the Mayans might have known to pick that specific date, 21 December 2012. How did they know? We'll be right back. 21 is the day, December 21st, 2012. Can you imagine going out perhaps early in the morning on that date, looking up and seeing a large, fiery, tumbling thing headed straight at Earth? Can you imagine that? We'll ask why the Mayans picked that particular date in a moment. I've always baited myself about the end of the Mayan calendar, figuring a couple of Mayans were sitting around. One said to the other, I've had it with this calendar crap. That's it. And that's when they stopped. They just got sick of making calendars. I don't know. But here we have a date, 21 December 2012, which could be the end of all, perhaps. Why that date? On what do you believe they might have based that, Graham?
Well, I'd like to pay tribute here to the work of John Major Jenkins. I know that he's been a guest on Coast to Coast before and indeed recently. And John's work on Mayan astronomy and the Mayan calendar tells us very, very exactly why that date, and also tells us that the Maya were extraordinarily accurate and precise observers of the heavens. That they had a very clear knowledge and understanding of time and the way that the passage of time affects the positions of the stars in the heavens, and in particular the positions of those stars lying in the background against the rising point of the sun on the horizon on particular days of the year. And what happens on 21 December 2012, and in fact, really, as John Major Jenkins points out, we're looking more at a window here rather than a very specific and exact moment, a window of about 40 years. When were you to, but in the exact middle of which is 21 December 2012, like the crosshairs on a sight. What happens is that if you stand on the morning of the winter solstice, which is the 21st of December, the point that the sun reaches its southernmost point in its annual journey, and you look at the place in the sky where the sun is going to rise in an hour's time, it's an hour before dawn, and you're looking at the point in the sky where the sun will rise, you'll see that the Milky Way is lying on the horizon in that position. And in fact, the sun will rise against the background of the exact center, the heart of the Milky Way. And the sun has been tracking towards that position for thousands and thousands of years and reaches it in our epoch. Now, I think what's going on here is that the Maya are not saying that that in itself causes the disaster. Mm-hmm. I think they're saying that that is the marker by which we can recognize the return of the disaster. It's like a clock in the heavens. And their astronomy was so accurate that they were able to predict this event thousands and thousands of years ago.
Well, if, given that date and a 40-year window, our butts are just about hanging out that window now.
Our butts are right hanging out of that window now. And and I do think that we need to take seriously what the Maya had to say. But that it also involves responsibly studying exactly what the Maya did have to say. And that is a very complicated message, not an extremely simple message that the world will just come to an end on that date. It's a bit more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. It certainly seems to be signaling the end of an age of the world, the end of an epoch, the closure on a long period of time. In fact, closure specifically on the whole of the last 5,000 years. But what exactly is to happen then still remains open to some question and to some doubt. But one thing I know for sure is that we would be unwise to ignore this warning and this message from the ancient Maya, a civilization that observed the heavens so accurately and so closely, a civilization that had inherited thousands of years of knowledge from stargazing ancestors such as the Olmecs who preceded the Maya. Is a civilization that we should take seriously. And when they tell us that something traumatic and tumultuous is going to happen on the date in our calendar that we call 21 December 2012, I think at the very least we should listen to them. We shouldn't just dismiss it and ignore it. We should take it into account. And one possibility that occurs to me, we were talking before the break about the notion that the fragments of a comet that had struck the Earth before might be due to return in exactly this period. And perhaps the Maya used fortuitous events in the sky which they were able to predict extremely accurately, to count, to act as a marker or a signal for the return of this event, so that by looking at the sky we could know that this danger was returning to us. But there's something more in the Maya calendar than that, and indeed in all ancient traditions that speak of the destruction of a former civilization. And speak of the possibility that this destructive episode could return. And what all these traditions agree on is that humanity itself is in some way implicated in its own fate. If you look, for example, at the story of Atlantis, which was passed down to us by the Greek philosopher Plato, and which indeed sets the destruction of Atlantis very much in this same period around 12,000 years ago. If you look at that story, you will find that the background to Atlantis was that it had once been a noble, good, nurturing, kind, and decent civilization, a civilization that was loved by the gods. But as time passed, it became arrogant, cruel, vicious, and mean-spirited. It became greedy. It became arrogant. It became so confident and so sure of itself that it angered the gods.
No, thank God we're not any of that today.
Well, exactly.
Are you actually suggesting that if we stop being, I think it's gross, repugnant, arrogant, cruel, wasteful, and excessive, then perhaps we avoid prophecy and we set aside this physical event somehow?
Well, I'm suggesting that the nature of life on Earth may be more mysterious than we realize it is, and that the intentions and actions of human beings may resonate outwards from us into the cosmos and may come back to us in ways that we might not like if our behavior is extremely negative. And I have to say, if there was ever a civilization that looks in mythological terms like a soon-to-be-lost civilization, then that civilization is ours. Because just like Atlantis, we have, if you like, lost the mandate of heaven. We have become arrogant. We have become entirely and intensely materialistic. We have created a system of thought that denies the existence of any mystery in the universe. We say that we know everything. Our scientists claim to be in command of all physical laws. If you look around the world today, the terrible man-made disasters that are unfolding, the shocking and horrific cutting down of the Amazon rainforest, which is proceeding at an unbelievable rate. To me, this is not just an ecological or an economic disaster. This is at heart a spiritual disaster. And we know in our personal lives that if we think negative thoughts, if we allow ourselves to be overwhelmed with darkness and feel dark towards others around us, then that darkness will return to us. It will rebound on us without any doubt whatsoever.
I believe that.
Yeah, exactly. And if we on the other hand, think good of others and try to act good towards others, then sooner or later that goodness will return to us too. And I can't help feeling that on a cosmic level, this is also likely to be true, and that our civilization today is indeed bringing down disaster upon ourselves. And in a sense, we don't even need a long-period comet coming back after 12,500 years in order to do it, because our civilization on its own is capable of destroying all life on this planet and of wiping itself out in a frenzy of greed and stupidity and violence. So I must say, yes, I'm very worried when I look at this situation. Look at the story of Noah in the Bible. Again, it's the same thing, that God had become angry with mankind. If you go back to the Sumerian civilization, the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the story of the flood that is told there, you read that the that the gods had become infuriated by the behavior and, in fact, by the noise that mankind was making, and decided to shut us up and silence us and send a flood to wipe the earth clean and save only a few who survived in a great ark. So I actually do think that our behavior is a big part of the story, and that one need not feel helpless in the face of these events. It is possible for human beings to change their behavior, to stop behaving in a wrong way. And I think in our hearts, all of us know that our society has gone grievously and mm-hmm. badly wrong. And you know, it isn't too late to turn things around. And this is the other side of the Mayan prophecy. That inherent in the Mayan prophecy is a notion not only of the end of a world age, but also of the beginning of another one, of a kind of rebirth of consciousness. And in a way, that sun sitting in the heart, the womb of the Milky Way, can also be taken as a symbol of rebirth, that there may be hope in this prophecy as well as fear, that there may be light in this prophecy as well as darkness, that somehow, perhaps, if we can transform our own consciousness, then even if a disaster does afflict the earth, we will be better placed to deal with it in some way.
So do you believe, Graham, do you believe it's possible? Certainly at the fringes of science, there's beginning to be a recognition of the possible power of consciousness.
Yes.
So do you believe that if we were in effect reborn and behaved entirely differently than we are now, that mass consciousness actually could avert the kind of catastrophic event, physical event, that you've been talking about?
Avert it, or at least make its consequences less damaging, and perhaps avert it entirely. Yes, I do believe that. There's so much wisdom has come down to us from antiquity that sees mankind not simply as a little local issue here on this planet, but really as the focus of a kind of cosmic struggle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness, and that the decisions and actions of mankind may rebound far beyond ourselves out into the cosmos, that we may in fact be the fulcrum on which the entire cosmos pivots. And while that may sound very self-aggrandizing, it is the message of the ancient text. It is, for example, the message of the Gnostic text, the Nag Hammadi library that comes down to us from Egypt, that was found in 1945. Documents that were written more than 2,000 years ago see us as the focus and fulcrum of a cosmic struggle. And I think, again, we need only look into our own lives in the small scale to see how this might work on a much larger scale.
Do you suppose, Graham, that we might be alone in all that is out there and all we can see, all these stars and all these planets? That, after all, we haven't detected any signals. We've had no affirmed absolute visitations. Could we be actually alone? That's pretty egocentric. But
well, yes, it is. I mean, of course, it's possible. I actually don't think we are alone. I think the universe is a gigantic cosmic and spiritual mystery. I think the universe has been created as a home for life. I think there is purpose and meaning in life, and I believe the universe is likely to be full of life. It's just that the distances are so great these isolated pockets of life separated by tens of millions of light years may find it very difficult ever to come into contact with one another. And I think it's even more complicated than that. I think we live not in a one-dimensional universe where everything is expressed and understood on the physical plane, but in a multi-dimensional universe. So actually, we may be dealing with intelligent beings not mm-hmm. only in other parts of this physical universe, but all around us and interpenetrating us all the time, perhaps very close to us, perhaps right next to us, and yet inaccessible to our senses in some way. But I'm sure that the whole thing, across all the dimensions, including this dimension that we happen to inhabit and live in and know in, that it is a theater for experience and a theater for life and for spirit to express itself in. And this is why consciousness is so important and why I think the scientists the scientists who believe that matter, that material things are all there is to reality, may be making such a huge mistake. It may be the case that our consciousness is not in fact an accident of our brain chemistry, just accidentally generated, an epiphenomenon of the brain, as some scientists like to say. It may be that the brain and the body are vehicles for consciousness, that the true essence of consciousness is non-physical, non-material, but that, as all the wisdom of the past and the religions of the world have said, that consciousness seeks to incarnate temporarily in physical form in order to learn certain lessons that can only be learned in that form. And this is why, for the preservation, the long-term preservation of the experiment of life on this planet and perhaps throughout the universe, it is necessary to contemplate, to undertake, to move ourselves towards a transformation of consciousness, because we all do know in our hearts that and in our guts that things are going terribly wrong in the world today, and that the state of consciousness that our society particularly values, this alert, problem-solving state of consciousness, or alternatively the other state of consciousness that it values, which is drunken oblivion, that this is not enough, that the human creature has much greater potential than this in terms of consciousness. And our society seems almost to be locked in a conspiracy to shut down our minds, to send us all to sleep, to make sure that we never benefit from the incredible opportunity of being born in a human body. What else is 24-hour-a-day reality TV beaming at us from all directions but a mechanism for sending us to sleep and for stopping us from using our God-given minds? And the only way out of this is for us to take our destiny in our own hands and to seek a new direction. And I think it begins at the very small personal level by transforming our own lives and our own relationships with others. And if enough people do that, then I do believe that a transformation of consciousness for the good, for the better, is possible, and that we need not feel necessarily doomed. Our destiny may be much more in our own hands than we realize.
I don't know. I watched Survivor China the other night. I have sinned. Your new book is called Supernatural, right?
Yes, that's right.
So obviously you've had. You've had a bit of change in. There's been a bit of change in your thinking.
Yes, I would say more of an evolution in my thinking. I've been very lucky. I've been very fortunate over the last two decades or so to have been able to spend a great deal of my life traveling in remote and exciting and intriguing parts of the world, exploring ancient monuments such as the Great Pyramids of Egypt, the temples of Angkor in Cambodia, putting together the evidence to argue the case for a lost civilization of deep antiquity. And really, I published a whole series of books on this. I think Fingerprints of the Gods is probably the best known, but there was The Message of the Sphinx, there was The Mars Mystery, there was Heaven's Mirror, and latterly there was Underworld, the book that looked at underwater ruins all around the world. And I really felt with Underworld that I had come to the end of that particular personal journey, that I had assembled a body of data, that I had written a series of books, that I had put all the evidence that I could gather out there into the world before the public. I took a lot of flack, a lot of personal attacks from academics and their friends in the media.
Oh, yes.
Some of it was very damaging. Some of it was very painful. I took physical risks, risked my own life. My wife, Santa, and I both risked our lives with Underworld, diving in currents that flow like a river underwater, having our diving gear ripped out of our mouths, surfacing and finding the boat not there. And finally, I got to the point where I felt I've done about as much of this as I can usefully do. And if I carry on, I'm either going to end up dead or I'm going to end up just boringly and endlessly repeating myself, which I don't want to do.
So all right, Graham, hold it right there. We're at a break point. His new book is in paperback, folks. It's called Supernatural. We'll be right back.